Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, 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 welcome. You have found us. Cooking Like a Pro on KCNR. It's 1460 AM. And for you FM people, it's 96.5 FM. You have found us. If you'd like to give us a call down here, this is Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef.
Hello.
Mrs. Chef Krista. And the number, 530-605-4567. Again, that number, if you'd like to call in with a cooking question or a food-related question, 530-605-4567. You know, I say food related because I used to say just call in with a question, and I had a previous radio show a couple of decades ago. And some guy called in and said, you know, how far is it in feet from the Earth to the moon?
And you didn't have Google to check.
You know, literally he did. And I, well, we didn't have cell phones back then.
Yeah.
You know, 2.5 decades ago. I mean, I was like, I don't know. I guess I'll have to make sure that when I ask if someone has a question, that it's a cooking question or a food-related question. But anyway, Cooking Like a Pro, you have found us here. And, hey, we were looking at all kinds of cool things coming up, but we are at the beginning of the year. Everybody got their New Year's resolution intact. Hopefully people are still hitting the gym or
probably no, not anymore.
Whatever it is that they're
for 3 weeks in,
they're doing. But I'm a member of the American Culinary Federation. I've been a member since the late 70s. It's a chef's organization nationwide, by far the largest one. And they put out this 225 trends to keep on the lookout for. These are our trends that trend report different things that they think are going to be hot. And you know, says they're coming back and making a big splash here is pizza.
Yeah, what kind of pizza?
Well, they just say about any kind of pizza. They have a Detroit style pizza. That pizza, it's, you know, it's baked in a pan, so it's square. It's got this nice crispy edges on the side of it. I've seen that for a thicker type of pizza. It's the Detroit style pizza. And according to these stats here, 117% growth on U.S. menus. I don't know. I don't know if there's anyone around here that does square pizza, but it's popular. And then they have a grandma pizza. That's the thin Sicilian style pizza. Usually baked on a sheet tray as well. But the New York fold over style, I didn't even know they called it that, but I guess that would be the super thin pizza that, you know, you pick it up and the tip goes down and you have to kind of chase it around.
I think they're really cut super wide and then they fold them and have to eat them.
Yeah, you know, a pizza turnover, pizza empanada, pizza taco. Yeah, it falls into all those different categories. And then, of course, Chicago deep dish. That's the, you know, St. Louis style. It has that kind of a cracker style crust and then the sauce a little bit sweet. And they use a provolone cheese on the Chicago style. But anyway, and then also they talked a little bit about, in here about fusion pizzas, and I don't recall seeing any of these. They have Middle Eastern, Korean, Indian, but I think that's the cool thing about just getting used to and experimenting with a variety of ingredients.
So when you go to a different international influence pizza, are you changing the sauce?
Yeah, I think that you're going to have to, because that's, you know, the base of the pizza. I mean, the best pizza I've ever had was in Italy, and it was just sauce, some fresh sage leaves, and fresh mozzarella. It was really as good as it was, mostly because of the crust.
Do they give in the report, if it's a Korean style pizza, do they give what would be on it?
Yeah, they got a bunch of different stuff here. It's got pages and pages and pages of stuff. But one of the things I like the idea is, take just the idea, whatever, let's just say a Philly cheesesteak, right? We know what that is. And then just turn it into a pizza, right? So you got your crust, you got your pizza, your dough rather. It's not crust yet.
Your crust is your bun if you're having a sandwich.
Yeah. So you've got your pizza base, and then you're just going to put, in this case, I'd probably go with more of an Alfredo sauce than I would spaghetti sauce, and then just put your thinly sliced beef and your sauteed peppers and onions, and quite a bit of course, mozzarella cheese. That's with the Philly, they look for the stretch. You know, how far does a cheese stretch? So it's got to have a lot of cheese on it.
Now, what would be the difference between making a flatbread sandwich as opposed to a pizza?
Just thinner crust. Thinner crust. If you do it with flatbread, flatbread, it's going to be, again, a little more close to that Detroit style that we initially talked about. But, again, they can call anything pizza that probably has a crust on it, but you could probably call it an awful lot of other things as well. But anyway, looking through here, soul food, I thought that was interesting. You don't have any soul food. I don't know that we have any soul food in our area.
Now we're talking about another, not talking pizza, not talking soul food flavored pizza. But
yeah. No, we're talking about a different, another trend.
Another trend. Okay.
Yeah, we got
tracking.
Unique pizzas is the first one that popped up as being the most popular that they anticipate for this year. And then soul food, Chinese cuisine. Fourth on the list was pickles. I was happy with that.
Different kinds of pickles?
Different kinds of, yeah, pickle. Well, or anything pickle. People think pickles, they think, well, first off, it's a cucumber, right? But you can pickle anything.
So are they talking pickles, like we understand, or pickling? Different vegetables?
Pickles. So anything pickles. So it could be, a radish pickle. It could be a different vegetable, but it's just done in what they consider, well, basically it's a brine, right? So it's, salt, sugar, water, and that's, there's not much to it. Sometimes they'll do, of course, the vinegar, but, mustard seed is a good thing to add, celery seed. I know your dad always did the bread and butter pickles with lots of onion, big chunks of onion.
Yeah, onion and whole garlic.
Whole garlic, yeah. You want to make sure your whole garlic is brined long enough to where you can eat it, though.
Sometimes that's the best part.
Yeah, and you can buy it pickled. Well, yeah, we might not have any friends, might not have anyone talk to you if you eat a raw piece of garlic. But, this I thought was interesting as well. Nourishing beverages. And they also call them, these are non-alcoholic beverages.
That's becoming a huge thing.
Functional beverages. Functional. So I guess that means you can function.
After having your beverage.
After having your beverage.
Yeah. I would think so.
That's a strange word. They gotta come up with a better word than functional. I don't want to walk up to a bar. Well, I don't go to a bar anyway. But, walk up to a bar. Hey, give me a couple functional blah, blah, blahs. Doesn't that sound weird?
Yeah, it does sound
weird. I'd rather just come up with, give me an island breeze or give me a,
working on it.
Virgin pina colada. But anyway, it's going to be out there.
Non-alcoholic beverages are becoming a huge, huge thing. There's a lot of training out there on them.
Yeah. I know the non-alcoholic beers just popped up. Everybody's got one. And that's the one thing about it is they're putting in literally millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of marketing. And these companies are saying, hey, this is a direction that's going to be hot. And so they're all making their own brand of NA beers, non-alcoholic beers.
That's definitely something I want to research.
It's interesting, though, that a lot of them are more expensive than regular beer. I've noticed that when I priced them out. It's like, wow, you're taking out the alcohol and you're charging me more for it.
Smaller run. Yeah, there's less people buying it. They're trying to cover their costs.
Are those something that, you can drink underage because there's no alcohol?
Exactly. Yeah, you could have one, Ben.
That's interesting.
I didn't want to give away your age, but yeah, you would be fine with one of those. But everyone's got their own brand of them. And here's a good one for you, Ben. Healthier lifestyle. Now you're a fairly fit young man, so maybe you don't worry about that. But anyway, there's a lot of things that they see that are going to be coming up on these trends. And remember, we always say that it's either a fad or a trend. If it's a fad, it will fade out. It won't hang out. If it's a trend, then it's something that's just going to be there for a while. It's going to continue to trend on.
So they're saying pizza, Chinese food,
soul food.
And
pickles, nourishing beverage. Don't forget the functional beverages. There's lots of, healthier foods, much more popular. Everyone's kind of looking at that. That's generally always going to be at the beginning of the year.
Especially January, yeah.
Yeah, but still, it seems different this year. I think it's going to carry on and people are just going to, well, they're, they're paying attention to what they're eating. But anyway, you can give us a call down here, 530-605-4567 if you'd like. But we are cooking like a pro. You found us at KNCR, 1460 AM. Chef Cal, Mr. Chef, back in just a moment.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red fried potatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim frim fries with the R's and they wish up for the
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Monte Cristo Classic Number 2. This Figueroa has been described as one of the world's great cigars, a silky Connecticut shade wrapper in combination with the best Dominican tobaccos form this perfectly constructed cigar. The smooth aroma of toasted almonds, vanilla, coffee, and spice round out this classic stick. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Considering the purchase of an e-bike, why not get more bang for your buck? Redding Electric Utilities e-bike program offers $1,000 towards an e-bike and $150 towards a lock and helmet for income-eligible applicants. With gas and car prices on the rise, there's no better time to take advantage of the new cycling connections in Redding. Join the movement to save some green while going green. E-biking means more fun, more trails for your tires, and more smiles per mile. Find out if you qualify at cityofredding.org/rebates.
Alan Gordon, Coach Master Collision. She had minor damage to her rear bumper. I wrote her an estimate. Later, I received a call. The lady responsible for the damage wanted to pay for the repairs out of pocket. Her insurance agent told her a claim would raise her rates for years. With our experience in the claim process, I explained to her most insurance companies would forgive a claim if the cost was below a minimum amount. I suggested she contact her insurance agent and have them review her policy. She called back very excited. It appeared her policy did extend forgiveness. They would pay for the repairs, and she wouldn't be charged with a claim or have to pay a deductible. The accident would not cost her a thing. She was very pleased. Good thing the vehicle owner came to the right place for repairs. We all pay a lot for insurance. Choosing Coachmaster will ensure you get the most for your money. Let this experience work for you. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. That was our chicken. That was Techno Chicken. I have no idea who is clucking. Maybe they had a chicken. Maybe they were squeezing it. They probably just recorded a chicken and video. Anyway, Cooking Like a Pro.
I was just singing that.
Thinking of that. Ben was just thinking, wondering how they did that.
No, so. That was me. I was the one singing it.
That sounds good. Hey, anyway, chicken, because we're coming back in, I wanted to talk about a particular item, and this is something that I had when I was in Tennessee, and it's called a Nashville hot chicken. And it's unique in a couple different things. Now, hot chicken is everywhere. You know, you've got just an innumerable amount of chicken, franchises. You know, I mean, Kentucky Fried Chicken started it, and then after the Colonel, it's everywhere. You know, I know Chick-fil-A, but there are, I don't even know how they're finding all these chickens. I mean, there's so many. And I think about, you know, and I think about this. I think about all the stuff that they can do in a lab. Why couldn't you take a chicken and cross it with an octopus so you could get more chicken legs? So like each chicken would have 8 legs. You ever see it? Like you go to like wing, like people in football time, they do the chicken wings. How will they do with all the rest of that chicken?
You lost me.
Did it? Okay. Anyway, but well, here's something you can do with the rest of that chicken. It's Nashville hot chicken. And what's neat, unique about this is I kind of look at it like the mock abalone dish, which is the chicken pounded out and marinated in clam juice. What we want to do here is we want to get flavor into the chicken. So we're going to take this chicken breast. We're going to pound that out. Chicken thigh would work great too. Boneless, of course. I would always use boneless on this because generally it's going to be a sandwich. And then you take the chicken, pound it out flat. Make sure you got a mallet that's got those little nubs on them. So, you know, you break up the connective tissue that's holding that muscle fiber together. And remember the chicken breast isn't real tough. It doesn't have a whole lot on it because the breast on a chicken doesn't really do much, right? They got the legs, which are dark meat, and it's going to, and the legs are working. They're, you know, getting more muscular and such. So you have to treat them a little different. But once you got to be real careful on the chicken because if you dry it out, it's dry, dry. And I'm going to let my wife talk about that in just a second, but I'll finish this recipe. This hot. So you pound this chicken breast. And you get it nice and thin. And then you marinate it for a day in pickle juice. So your pickle juice is your brine. So don't throw out your pickle juice when you're done eating your pickles. So we're talking about a dill brine. Maybe some fresh dill in there. But basically you're talking about, you know, your vinegar, your sugar, your water. Some dill. And, you know, a little salt and pepper, whatever it is you want. I wouldn't add too much heat at this point because you just want to marinate it. So you marinate that for one day. And then when you take it out, you come up with your own dry rub. And they call them dry rubs because they're dry and you rub them on things. The chicken, of course, is wet, so it's the dry rub's going to stick to it. But, you know, things like I like to go back to just simple Cajun seasonings. Find a really good Cajun seasoning or come up with a good Cajun seasoning recipe. That's what I would recommend. And then you're going to want to lightly dredge the chicken that's been brined. And then you're going to bread that. And you want to bread it in buttermilk because it's going to be thicker. Buttermilk and then flour. And if you want that extra crunchy, crispy outside, bread it twice. Okay, so we've taken this brined chicken breast in pickle juice. We've put a nice, like, dusting of our favorite seasoning on there. And then buttermilk. Shake it off, flour, shake it off, buttermilk again, flour, and only do that if you want that extra thick coating on it. But the thing, it just gets nice and crunchy.
So this is a fried chicken dish?
It is a fried chicken dish. And then you get your cast iron skillet ready, and there you go. Just, you know, fry it generally on a breast. You're talking 3 or 4 minutes per side. But the thing that you always want to hit is the right temperature. And what's that temperature?
155.
155 when you pull it out. A chicken needs to be 160 when you're eating it. And when you're deep frying something, that's a pretty violent cooking method. And so there's a lot of activity going on in that chicken, and you don't want to lose any of that flavor because it's all being, it's encrusted. The one great thing about deep frying is you just have to do it right. Deep frying's got such a bad rap. And it's got a bad rap because of the process. I can't tell you how many recipes I see where people say, we're going to fry this, get the oil up to 350. No, get the oil up to 375. Because you're going to take something that's
cold
and stick it in there, and it's going to
drop the temperature of the oil.
And then you have to wait for it to recover, to get back up. But it needs to fry when it first goes in there. And that goes with anything you're cooking in oil. Sauteing, braising. When you put something in the oil, it needs to be hot. You can tell by putting your hand over it. Tell by maybe carefully flicking a little bit of water in there. Sometimes you can look at it if it's got kind of a little sheen going on, especially if it's olive oil. And, you know, I use half butter, half oil because the butter adds flavor. And then the oil allows me to get the temperature higher for whatever it is I'm sauteing. But start at 375 when it comes to deep frying. And don't overcrowd. You know, don't throw, you know, 5 pounds of French fries into 30 gallons of oil and expect the oil to get back up to cooking temperature anytime soon because you're literally throwing something out of the freezer.
So for those of us that don't have a deep fryer, can you do a shallow fry?
Yeah, shallow fry. Yeah, you want a really good heavy bottom pan. And I would suggest, a pan that has some sides to it, at least 3 or 4 inches above the height of the oil. The oil, you just need enough to where you can submerge whatever you're cooking. And then I get a candy thermometer and just sacrifice a candy thermometer for your deep frying. Save your separate candy thermometer for your candy. Because, you know, you want to start getting up into cracks, right? And a hard crack is 375 degrees. So you want your, but in this case, that's sugar, of course, but now we're talking about oil. Get it up to 375 and just, you know, clip it on the side of your pan so it's measuring the oil. Make sure that little bulb of mercury on the bottom of your thermometer is not touching the side and is not touching the bottom. So you're really getting an accurate temperature. And then go and put your item in there, 375, let it crisp, get nice and brown, and then check it with your temperature gauge.
So what if you don't want to do a big old fat full-on breast? Can you do tenders, the smaller pieces?
Yeah,
so you can make little chicken tender size?
Chicken tenders, chicken nuggets. You know, I don't know what they put in chicken nuggets. I'm assuming there's chicken in there somewhere. I don't know. Ben can probably look that up, you know, how much chicken's in a chicken nugget.
Well,
it depends on the quality of the nugget.
So getting away from, you know, preformed chicken nuggets, if you want to make your own chicken nuggets, you just need to cut your breast that size into a nugget size, and you could still do the full-on hot chicken
process. Yeah, I would probably cut it more like a finger shape, like you mentioned, like a tender.
39% to 50%
is chicken. Okay, well, we don't want to know what the rest of it is. Okay, so we'll,
other than breading, the rest we will.
You know, those are those words we can't pronounce and we can't. But anyway, and probably aren't good for us, to be honest. But when you do make that chicken tender, make sure you cut it across the grain. So when they eat this chicken, they're eating like short little, you know, half inch pieces of muscle fiber. Because if you go along with the length of the meat, and the way it's going, the fibers, then you're just going to have this long, stringy thing. So always important, cut across the grain. Always cut across the grain.
So what would you serve with this hot? So you actually had this Tennessee hot chicken?
Yeah.
So what?
Fried pickles?
They're very into their pickles, I hear back there now.
Yeah, fried pickles. Yeah, I didn't really care for it. I do a little different. I haven't done since I've been home, but I'll have to check them out.
So they brine the chicken in pickle juice, and then they also serve fried pickles on the side.
Yeah, fried pickles. You can get coleslaw. You can get a variety of things. Grits are real big. I know I had grits with my waffle one morning for breakfast. I offered grits instead of potatoes.
What's the outer coating, the crunchy? Is it panko or is it cornflakes? Yeah. What is it?
Well, you can use all those. But in something like this, you're really just using all-purpose flour. So you go in from pickle juice, buttermilk, all-purpose flour, dredge it, lightly coat, meaning, and then repeat that process and go and throw it in the fryer. Now, you did a chicken the other day at home, and you did it straight out of the freezer. And very few people understand the idea of that. But it's done a lot. I mean, a lot of people cook their steaks out of the freezer.
Yeah,
I'm not saying I agree with it, but, I mean, it's... If you can get that finished quality, and in your case, that chicken was perfect, but frozen chicken is going to have saline in it, so it's already got a light salt solution. So really, all you got to do is just get it to hit the right temperature.
Yeah, so what I did is it came straight from the freezer. These were full on. These were big chicken breasts. They weren't tenders. I thought they were tenders.
They were like turkey.
They were really big chicken breasts, but frozen, and they did have the saline solution in them to tenderize them. And I poured salsa over the top. Now, I do have a caveat with the salsa at the end. But so if you pour a simmering sauce over the top of them, and then I just covered them and put them in a 350-degree oven, and they were in there for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But this was kind of a set it and forget it thing. I mean, this wasn't cooked quick, but it was. I got home at 5, and I had absolutely nothing defrosted, nothing fresh to cook. And I went, oh, I got frozen chicken, threw the simmering sauce on top, covered it, put in the oven, just turned the oven, let it go. An hour later, we had perfect chicken.
Yeah. Except now, but remember with that red sauce, when you cover it, I would cover it with, you know, plastic and then with foil. You never want foil to touch acid. If you put aluminum foil over something, we talked about this a little bit last week with lasagna. If you put it over a chicken with the tomato sauce, or in your case, what you did with the salsa, you got to be real careful because you don't want that aluminum to, well, unless you like the flavor of aluminum.
No. Or if you have a glass lid, if you have a particular baking dish with a glass lid on it.
Or, glass is always good. And, you know, if you have some kind of a metal deficiency, that might be the way to go.
Here was the one problem. The salsa that I used was processed. It was in a jar, cooked salsa, and it had a lot of salt in it. And because the chicken already had a amount of salt in it, and the salsa had salt in it, when that cooked down, it became very salty. So you need to find a very low sodium simmering sauce. The higher the sodium, especially with the cooking down process, the salt's going to become more prominent.
Yeah, I think the idea would be probably just don't cook it down. When you cook it down, you're concentrating any flavor. Right, so if it's got sodium in it, you're going to get more of that. If it's got whatever it's got, you're reducing that. You're concentrating that down. And you're right, it's real easy to overseason things. And a lot of people just will overseason because they won't allow things, the seasoning to melt. You know, they'll use, you know, I prefer to use kosher salt, and I sprinkle kosher salt on something. Then, you know, if you taste it right away, well, the salt hasn't even melted in there. You know, it might take a few more seconds. And then they add a little more salt and then stir it in and add a little more. Before you know, it's going to be too salty.
But the flavor was fantastic because I added fresh garlic and deglazed with a little bit of tequila. And it was it's just super salty. So just be very careful of your simmering sauce, whatever you're going to use that does not have a lot of sodium in it.
Yep. Don't cook it down too much. There's another tip for you on, or at least from Cooking Like a Pro. We will be back in just a moment.
Les poissons, how I love les poissons! Love to chop them and to serve les familles. First I cut off their heads and I pull out their bones.
Happy New Year, Redding, from your friends at Black Bear Diner, reminding you that if you're looking for more food, more fun, and more family, this is the place to be. You can count on a warm atmosphere and deliciously fresh home-style food. It's the perfect spot for every generation, with something for everyone. Come for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Black Bear Diner, 2605 Hilltop Drive, Redding.
Black Bear Diner.
Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Redding. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
At Greg's Pump and Well Service, we believe integrity is the cornerstone of everything we do. This month, we proudly salute our armed forces and first responders, those who embody true service, dedication, and integrity. When you choose us for your pump and well needs, you're choosing a company that shares those same values. Thank you for your service. Let us serve you with pride. 530-282-5395. Call us at 530-282-5395, license 109-0355.
I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring.
Welcome back. You have found us here again at Cooking Like a Pro, and we want to just reach out and thank our sponsor of the Cooking Like a Pro podcast so you can hear us. It's Charlie's Tap House, located down in the Gateway Shopping Center, just 10 minutes south of town, and they have this fantastic new adventure they're doing, and it's literally called The Adventure. It's a adventure room, Charlie's Adventure Room, and boy, are they packed now. That new room that they opened up just beside there, kind of across from where it used to be a movie theater there. It's kind of across from that area. And they got just all kinds of things in there. They got an arcade, a couple bouncy houses, and then you can also have your kids make pizza. And, I mean, what kind of an activity? Wait, when you have a kid, you know, now all of my children are probably, well, maybe my youngest, he'd probably still have fun, but,
He used to go down there for his birthday parties to make pizzas.
And he's been down there to make it before.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you can, the kids get to have a little project. They can make their own pizza. They can have, you know, includes pitchers of soda, and they can just play and jump around and use up all that energy that we used to have. But anyway, they got a couple of different packages down there, but give them a call or actually go online. Great way to go online to charlews.com and, check them out. You will love Charlews Adventure Room. They were doing that, I think on weekends, but give them a call down there. Talk to either Charlew or Kathy. Tell them, Cooking Like a Pro sent you down and, enjoy yourself, and they'll take care of all of your birthday needs. All you gotta do is show up with the kids and I guess the gifts. So anyway, my wife has been working on something for a while now.
A long while.
Yeah, a long while. And this is Chef Cow, my wife, Mrs. Chef Krista. And she's been on this for a while, and we teased it towards the end of the year because it was getting closer. But this is just an amazing guide. And I want to say, you know, Krista, you did an awesome job. But it's how to make vegetables taste good. But it just covers more than just that. It covers every little detail of things.
There's a lot of cooking tips in there.
What are some of the highlights that you found when researching and putting this book together?
Well, first off, I learned really how a plant breaks down into what we can eat.
Mm-hmm.
Understand that spices come from seeds and bark, and the herbs come from leaves, and that you're not just eating, you know, we think vegetables, we think, broccoli, cauliflower, mm-hmm. carrots, celery.
Yeah.
And it's so limited in scope, and there's such a large arena that you can go into to really discover new flavors, and it's really about layers of flavor and different textures and putting things together so you have something more interesting than just broccoli on the side.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that's really helped, of course, in all kinds of ways and maybe hurting some, but that's just a cell phone. You can pick it up and say, okay, you know, Siri, what vegetables are in season? Or you can, you know, plug it into your Google or something and say, whoa, wow, hey, look at that. Beets are fresh. You know, so you're getting that great sweet beet flavor as opposed to the dirt beet flavor that you get when they're out of season. But maybe it's turnips. It could be any number of things that we really don't normally experiment in. Now, when you're talking about sulfuric vegetables, I mentioned turnips, you mentioned broccoli and cauliflower, those types of things can, you know, getting rid of that sulfur taste, it will generally is going to make a more palatable dish. And usually shocking will do that, you know, drop them in boiling water until they're, you know, not quite al dente, still a little, just touch undercooked, and then get them out. That sulfur flavor will be gone in the water and in the steam, and then go and season them and flavor them and go from there.
A little honey, a little thyme.
I like adding eggs. I like adding eggs to mine. I like making like frittatas, or I guess you'd call it a quiche, but you know, real men don't eat quiche. I don't know. I imagine someone's listening that remembers the real men don't eat quiche.
Yeah, was that popular back in the 90s or something?
Yeah, I think I want to say it was Marie Callender gig or something. But
well, really, it's just an egg pie.
Yeah.
You know, beaten egg with vegetables in it. And then if you want a little extra oomph, you put it in a pie crust.
Yeah, as long as you're not a man, I guess you're good.
I'd rather have a quiche than a frittata. You get that crust.
Well, there's a ton of things. Anyway, information on selecting vegetables, cooking vegetables, how to combine them. I think that the key is when you're cooking the vegetable, you want to, or anything for that matter, you want to retain as much flavor. So if you're poaching something in water, remember that water is going to remove some of that flavor. But if you're barbecuing, for example, you know, they got those little pans, looks kind of like a pizza pan. Some of them are square. They got little holes in there, and you put them on top of your barbecue, and, you know, just take your, I take my vegetables, cut them up, make sure they're all the same size. Very, very important.
And that's in the book.
Yeah.
One of the tips in the book.
You don't want, you know, one to be crunchy and one to be mushy. So cut them all the same size. That's one of the more important parts. And then just, I toss them in a bowl with a little bit of whatever your oil is, flavoring oil. And then maybe you want to use sesame oil, and then toss them with some sesame seeds and maybe some fresh ginger. And if you want to go in Asian direction, maybe even some coriander or fresh coriander. You could use some cilantro. And then just toss this in the bowl with a little bit of oil until it's just well coated. I just found that's the easiest way to completely coat it, and then just throw them on a pan. I'd probably spray, well, if they got oil on them, you don't need to spray the pan. Set them on top of a hot barbecue and shake them every once in a while, but you're going to get that smoky flavor.
Well, and you can also do that just for roasting. If you don't have a barbecue, you can use that same technique. Put it on a pan and put it in the oven. Let them roast.
Yeah. So again, instead of taking these vegetables and doing, you know, so many different, you know, applications when it comes to, you know, the recipe method, you know, whatever the method is that you want to do. You know, for me, I like, well, it's always time of year, so remember that. But one thing about vegetables that you need to bear in mind is they are part of the plate, right? Generally, they might be the center of the plate. Maybe you're going to take cauliflower and cut it and cook it like a steak. There, you know, that's something that you see every once in a while, especially from a vegan perspective. Cauliflower steak,
mushroom steaks.
Yeah. Well, those are, you know, that way you get that umami flavor, right? I mean, which always kind of surprises me. You know, it's like, okay, well, you can talk to a vegetarian. What's your best, you know, what kind of food you like? And it's, well, the one that tastes the most like meat. So, you know, like a grilled portobello mushrooms. We used to do those with white balsamic
those
dressing.
Those are so good.
Oh, yeah, and good for you.
Those are so amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can marinate those in a little balsamic and then barbecue them and drizzle them with a little, you know, reduction. When you make a reduction, remember it's going to be one part sugar, two parts vinegar, and then reduce it by half. And then you get more of a syrup you can kind of drizzle on there. But that, those are real. Actually, on that dish, we did white and dark balsamic dressings. Yeah, that was, I think that was the old Rivers restaurant. But again, there's, depends on the time of year, the quality of the food. But again, you want to make sure that you cut it right. Make sure that you use some kind of a cooking process. It doesn't steal all of your flavor out of it. Cause, I mean, a vegetable is a milder flavor for the most part. There's some that might be a little bit stronger, you know, things like, you know, fennel. But, you know, for the most part, vegetables are fairly mild.
And for things that are stronger and more pungent, we talk about backing those off, that those would be the extras that you would add to it to bring a little bit more strength to the dish.
Yeah.
But don't use them necessarily as the primary ingredient.
And different textures is always nice, too. Have some al dente, like especially when you use asparagus. I know when I was went over and visited with my cousin earlier in the week. She's over in Nevada, and had some really nice pencil asparagus. That was, I mean, but pencil asparagus, regular asparagus, you might look at in a cookbook and see regular asparagus. It says it takes 4 to 5 minutes. Well, pencil asparagus takes about 45 seconds. So just because asparagus, you know, something that's a little bigger versus something that's a little smaller.
Yeah, some are as big as round as your pinky and some are as big as round as your thumb. And
you know, and if you want to make sure your asparagus is firm, ready to eat, you just want to grasp the tip side of the asparagus with one hand and the stem side where it grows out of the ground with the other, and then just bend them down like a U shape. And wherever it breaks, that's where it's going to be nice and tender. So you can discard the bottoms, the woody ends, or what else can you do with those?
You can make an asparagus stock to make a soup.
Yeah, for a vegetable-based soup or in the case of asparagus, and you know, you've got a great asparagus stock already started. Throw a little more fresh asparagus in there, hit it with a roux, tighten it up, salt and pepper.
Which is another thing that we mention in the book is using total utilization of a product.
Mm-hmm.
Things that you would think would be tossed, you can still use them. Just like the leaves on a celery or the stems of a cilantro. Those are still usable, and most people just throw those away.
And I think a good place to start, because people can be a little confused, like you mentioned, there's only so many vegetables that we see, that we see when we go out to a restaurant. We don't really see too many things that are very, you know, exotic. I don't think I've ever been to a restaurant where I've seen, you know, sautéed cucumbers, but I make them at home and they're excellent. How often do you see something like a turnip or a daikon or something that's more, you know, that comes from the radish family that still has a little bit of pepper in it, you know, and you can grill those things. So it's really, again, up to what it is that you're accompanying it with. That's always a good thing. Like, for example, you take something like you're having a chicken dish. You wouldn't serve chicken necessarily with asparagus, because asparagus is an elevated vegetable and the poultry is a more of a peasant food as far as the category. So if you're doing asparagus, maybe it's going to go with a higher end, you know, dish like lamb or maybe even a nice dish like a halibut.
So explain, you did that to me before. You said something about you've never put this with this because this is elevated and this is common. Yeah. I've never looked at it that way.
Well, when you're competing internationally, it kind of gets beat into you that you have.
But if I like asparagus on the side of my chicken.
Well, it's the same as anything else. You do what you like. You know, same thing with wine, drink what you like. But if you're looking for suggestions on things, then that would be one of the things to consider. So if I was doing, let's say, rabbit, then because it's more of a peasant food, we were raised on rabbit and squirrel and whatever, you know, Dad and Clay and Ben could shoot, me and Mom and Grandma would cook. And squirrel and rabbit was always there as a staple, and then at buck camp, and then beyond that, you know, of course, was venison. So any and every kind of venison.
So what is considered an elevated vegetable?
Oh, asparagus is elevated. You know, things that cook in the ground or that grow in the ground, like carrots and potatoes, those would be less elevated. You know, same thing. I think I'd just say root vegetables. Would anything that's a root, you know, a beet falls that category, a carrot falls that category. So below the ground would be a less elevated vegetable. And look at it as just the cost, the expense.
But what's interesting is,
Brussels sprouts are a good one.
A beet.
Uh-huh.
You consider that common because it's underground, but beets have been made into such an elevated item now. You don't see them on very many menus, but you do see them in high-end restaurants as a golden beet salad or roasted beet or beet soup.
If you do them right, beet is definitely one of my favorites. So we're going to go and take our final break. We appreciate you listening to us on Cooking Like a Pro, Chef Kyle and Mrs. Chef. We'll be back in just a moment.
Greens, potatoes, tomatoes, lamb, rams, hogs, dogs, chickens, turkeys, rats, you name it! God damn it!
Jones's Fort Gun Shop, serving Shasta County for over 50 years. It's a new year and we're very excited about the new leadership for our nation. Jones's Fort is offering the brand new Ruger LCP Max 380 at only $349 and the new Ruger Max 9 at just $395. Jones's Fort, serving all your firearm needs since 1962. You can find us at 1600 East Cypress Avenue or just give us a call, 530-222-3223.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website at havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. Thank you, Dino. Appreciate the intro on that. You know, exquisite things. You have a quote in here that's from one of my favorite chefs when studying the history of it. And that is, if the divine creator has taken pains to give us delicious and exquisite things to eat, the least we can do is prepare them well and serve them with ceremony. Chef Fernand Point. The T is silent. Point. Fernand Point. Anyway, he was, from, kind of around the Auguste Escoffier era.
Yes.
He died in 1955, but that's where we get a lot of our old school French things. And something else about the vegetables is they can be the first thing you prep, but then the last thing you cook.
Yeah.
I can't think of a vegetable off the top of my head other than maybe avocado I think falls in the fruit category, but
then it'll oxidize.
Yeah, that you can't prep ahead. Prep ahead the day before. Cut your vegetables for the week, folks. I mean, if you cut up some broccoli and cauliflower, it's going to be good 5, 6, 7 days later, you know, especially if you're storing it in water. But then again, that's what you're saying. You're starting off with good, high quality product. If you're not, then of course those times are going to be reduced, quite a bit. But with vegetables, understanding the difference between, the density of it. So is it dense or is it soft? That's really where the cooking time comes in. You know, the softer it is, the less cooking time, and maybe something a little more gentle you can do. You can, like asparagus, you can take it from a raw steak and go right onto a grill.
Okay, everybody listening, I have a quiz for you. Which would take longer, a potato to cook or a piece of meat, like a steak or a piece of chicken? Everybody get your answer. Lock it in. Take a thought. Time to think about that. Does it take longer to cook a potato or a steak?
Well, that depends on a lot of things. But, I mean, if you're baking the potato, a baked potato takes an hour to cook at 400 degrees. If it's like, you know, maybe a 12-ounce potato, like a normal-sized potato, where, you know, a steak can cook literally, you know, 4, 5, 6 minutes.
That's the answer. Yeah, you can cook your meat. Usually your meat is cooked last. Yeah. Anything that's with heavy starch, like a potato, they take a long time.
Yeah, when you're talking about a starch, yeah, plus starches are going to hold better. You know, rice is pretty easy to hold as long as you don't add too much water. Potatoes, of course, if they're wrapped in foil, they'll hold for quite some time while you're finishing your protein. And then, of course, your vegetables, just that last minute. You know, mainly what I like to do is get my vegetable ready where all I've got to do is bring it up to temperature and season it. A little butter in the pan, you know, throw in, you know, my beets. If I'm going to use beets, a little salt, pepper, and cream. I like to put cream in with my beets because really just because they turn fluorescent.
Okay, it's
such a bright color. You know, it adds a little zing to it. We used to do a lot with beets. Red cabbage is, oh, I got a great recipe for red cabbage. Is that in this book? My red cabbage recipe?
No.
Anyway, red cabbage, and you slice it thin, and all you really see out there is you see it as a salad garnish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shred it up.
Mixed in with cabbage, with coleslaw.
But we take it, we cut it maybe in quarter inch to half inch, you know, slices, kind of larger pieces, and then just braise it down. Braise it down in a little bit of, you know, fat, whatever you want, salt, pepper, and then you're going to flavor it with these three ingredients evenly. When I say evenly, I'm not talking about the amount. I'm talking about how well you can taste them. Okay, so you got your red cabbage. You're sautéing it down. You're going to add red wine vinegar. You're going to add cumin, and you're going to add brown sugar. And you're going to add just enough where you can taste each one of those, and those don't overpower each other. So, of course, less on the vinegar. Cumin is a fairly high-profile flavor. And then the brown sugar is just going to add sweetness. And I'll tell you that's one of those combinations. It's like, okay, yeah, that's good. That's good. We used to serve it with eviscerate. That's, you know, take the bones out of a game hen. We do a roasted game hen on a big bed of that cabbage with some nice cheddar mash on the side.
Yeah. Well, with the sugar and the vinegar, you get your sweet and sour, and then you got the depth coming in with the cumin.
Yeah, so well-rounded. So you're getting all those flavors at once. You're getting your acid, you're getting your sweet, you're getting your salty, you're getting your spice, you're getting a little bit of heat. Also, of course, comes out of that cumin.
Now, real quick, before we go further, we haven't talked about where to get this. This book is now for sale.
For sale. Okay, I'll let you describe that then.
Okay.
You're the internet person.
So this all started back in August when somebody asked me how to cook vegetables. I'm like, I can do that. I'll write something. And then it turned into a big, long, six-month project turning into a book. And now it is for sale on culinarilyyours.net. There is a pop-up where you can get a free page that is a quick fix guide for vegetables. You can get that for free. And then you also can get a discount on the actual book if you do that.
Yeah, this book is really incredible, folks. I mean, I'm just looking at one page here where it covers all the different bulbs that are available, like garlic and shallots and different types of onions and ginger, even horseradish, wasabi. Then you got another list of all the roots, which are underground, a list of all the different fungi, which would be the different mushrooms that are available out there, and then things that are leaves. Knowing where it grows, does it grow above the ground? And if it's rainy season, make sure that you check your romaine lettuce and your celery, because they grow straight up for any amount of dirt or anything that could go in.
For me, it was fascinating learning about plants. I mean, I'm not huge into plant
vegetables. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm not huge into plant-based eating. I not that I don't agree with it, but looking at the structure of a plant and how we eat it, it has been fascinating to learn what we are actually eating, what part of the plant.
Yeah. And knowing how. I mean, because you can destroy Brussels sprouts I always like to go to because they just don't prepare them correctly very often. Matter of fact, I generally, you get fried Brussels sprouts and they're just raw in the middle. You have to know how to clean them. And we actually did a variety of shorts that are going to be coming out here in the not too distant future that are all on vegetable preps.
Now most the book probably, is done.
Yeah, now the book is done. We'll get those shorts out there. And I'd say most of them are anywhere between 1 and 2 minutes long. But just kind of, here's how you would, you know, work with an onion, something fairly simple. Here's what, you know, celery, how to pull the, a lot of people do use celery and they don't pull the ribs off of it. So you got all that stringiness. So you can pull that off in a variety of ways and we show you how to do that. And, you know, you keep talking about vegetables here and it just reminded me of what Julia Child said about vegetables. She took vegetables and kind of put them in this category of like diet food. And her famous, quote was, diet food or vegetables is diet food is what I eat while I'm waiting for my steak to cook. that sounds so much, so much like
her. The thing is, it's supposed to balance. If you have just steak, it's just so heavy. And if you put the vegetables, it's supposed to balance it, you know, light and bright, maybe a little bit of sweetness and a little bit of herbaciousness.
Well, if you're looking for vitamins, you're not going to get them in a whole lot of things. I mean, you're going to get some things out of meat. You know, you're going to get some vitamins. But most of those things are going to come from a nice plate of, or a nice side of fresh vegetables and or fruit. I mean, fruit is explained in here. You got your quick fix vegetables and, here's a list of 12 different ways just to quickly enhance your vegetables.
And this is what you get in the download. This is the free download.
Yeah. Toss in a vinaigrette, add spices, make them more complex, add a little sauce, aromatics. Aromatics are always great. And generally when I use a seed, I'll put the seed in a pan and then kind of toast it so you can really get that toasted, that perfume comes out, the oil.
What's the best seed that you would recommend doing that with?
It would depend on the vegetable, but things like celery seed, fennel. Fennel's pretty strong. Celery's not quite as strong. But
what was that ingredient?
Fennel?
It sounds an awful lot like a different ingredient.
Oh. Okay. Well, we'll talk about that one after the break. But a ton of things. Different seasonings to have in your pantry. You know, just to have on hand, different things to flavor them with, different oils. I don't know how many oils we have at home. I try to stay away from seed oils for the most part. But there's some that avocado oil you got, I've been using, and it's excellent, very mild. If you can get a grapeseed oil, it's Charlie Trotter said that grapeseed oil was his all-the-time go-to because it's the most mild in the sense that mild's
neutral
the wrong word.
Flavor.
Or neutral, yeah. It's got the neutral flavor so you can do a lot of different things
but
with
because
it.
It is a seed oil, it's not one you want to cook with and have heat break it down. You want to use that for more salads.
Yeah, your vinaigrettes. And a lot of vinaigrettes can, there's nothing wrong with a vinaigrette on a food dish. We talked about this, not too long ago about just using a fairly simple Italian vinaigrette style dressing as a marinade for poultry. Works real good. It works good for you can brush it on seafood. You can you put it on steak. Really, that's the one thing about food is you're not limited. You're only limited by your imagination and creativity, which comes from the understanding and the knowledge that you kind of embrace. And that's the one thing that I think that's great about this guide, folks. I would highly, of course, obviously recommend that you get it, but I get ideas when I look at things. So I look at something and I think, okay, how would I cook that? How would I prepare that? What kind of flavors would go with that? What kind of protein would that do? Because we want to go back to our general plate when we first started was generally 30% protein, 30% starch, 30% vegetable. You can modify that now with people kind of the gluten thing. Sometimes the starch portions are getting a little smaller, vegetable portions are getting a little bigger. Certainly proteins are getting smaller. I mean, we can cook up an 8-ounce steak and probably feed all three of us at home because we kind of eat smaller meals.
I don't eat more than 2 or 3 ounces.
Yeah, usually. It's a great way to go. And use whole good ingredients. I was working on my cookbook this morning and I was reminded when I was young, we used to have whole milk that was delivered to our door in these glass Hopkins. I had to call mom and dad and ask them. It was Hopkins Dairy. somewhere here in the North State. I'm not sure where. So you can send us a text at cookinglikeapro.net. Is that it?
Cooking Like a Pro Podcast.
cookinglikeapropodcast.net if you know anything about Hopkins Dairy, and we'll make sure to share that with the folks next week. But, you know, the fresh milk, fresh butter, fresh eggs. There you go.
Fresh is best.
Fresh is best.
Now, if you have not caught any of our previous episodes, you can look for them at Cooking Like a Pro Podcast on Spotify and Apple and YouTube.
Yep, we are all over out there, folks. Let's not forget to make a difference in someone else's day. Let's take the word random out of the adage, random acts of kindness, and be intentional about what we're doing out there and just enjoy yourself. So God bless you. We'll see you next time on Cooking Like a Pro.
This has been KCNR Free Fire Radio 96.5.